We're waiting for the meds to work or not work. For Maisie's organs to shut down or not. For her to live or die. Ah, and you wait so well, she said with raised eyebrows. Guilty, I answered. She looked at Beckett, and then our connected hands. Ah, this is Beckett Gentry, I said, slipping my hand free and patting his shoulder. Lame. He's... Holy shit. What was he? How did I introduce him? He wasn't my boyfriend. The guy wouldn't even kiss me, even though he was pretty much around 24/7. I'm her late brother's best friend, he explained as he stood, offering his hand. I understand you're Maisie's neuroblastoma specialist. She loves you. Dr. Hughes shook his hand and smiled. Well, I'm certainly glad to hear that. Maisie is a favorite of mine. And I'm pleased to meet you, Mr. Gentry. Ella has definitely needed some support. I'm glad to see she's getting it. I'll be here as long as she needs me. He answered the question she didn't ask, and her eyes went soft. Another one bites the dust. Then we got down to business. She asked a few questions and checked Maisie's chart for the latest labs, her brows knitting together at times as she read everything over. She listened to her breathing, checked out her IVs, and watched her pressure. How worried do I need to be? I asked, knowing she wouldn't bullshit me. Her sigh was deep, and she flipped through the chart again. I don't know. And I can't say until we see how she reacts to the meds. I can tell you that she's way better off than she would have been in a few hours. You saved her life. Colt did, I said softly. Those two, she lightly chuckled, one soul split between two bodies. He said he'd heard her crying in his dream, Beckett said. He woke up and went into her room and found her burning up. My head snapped toward his, wondering when Colt had... While you were in the truck. When he'd talked to Colt on the porch. The gratitude I felt toward Beckett for his connection with Colt was tempered a little with jealousy that he knew my son in a way I didn't, because Beckett was around more than I was. What's next? I asked, needing to look past this. It will take a few hours, but once we're certain the meds work... Not with this. With the treatments. Looking forward and all that. I didn't want to think about what I couldn't control. I wanted to focus on what I could, what to research next, to prepare her for. That I could handle. Dr. Hughes nodded, like she understood, and then sat in the last empty chair in the room, leaning forward on the small table. We were supposed to meet next week, she said. Right. You sure you want to do this now? I glanced at my little girl fighting a battle I couldn't pick up a sword for, and instead chose another front. I am. That last round of chemo didn't move her levels like we were hoping. Having the tumor gone was all well and good, but if her bone marrow was still overwhelmingly cancerous, another one would grow. We'd cut off the top of the tree, but the roots were still alive and fighting. Is she developing a resistance to the chemo? Beckett's hand found mine again, and I gripped, hard. It's a possibility. We'd discussed the MIBG treatment, and I think it's our best bet. She leaned down and pulled a pamphlet out of her purse, putting it on the table. I got you some information on a trial. She looked over at Beckett, and I knew exactly why. You can talk about it in front of him. It's fine. Up until now, the only people who knew what my finances looked like were Ada and Dr. Hughes, and probably the cell phone company that had gotten used to me perpetually paying a month late. The trial will cover certain aspects, but not everything. And the only hospital in Colorado with the facilities to do this is Colorado Children's. She gave me a knowing look. The cost was astronomical, and I had no way of covering it in cash. But I'd think about that later. Submit the paperwork, and let's get her in. Okay. It needs to be soon. Doesn't everything?
Tell me about the MIBG, Beckett asked 7 hours later, as we ate dinner in the small cafeteria. Maisie slept upstairs, her pressure hovering, her temp fevered. She'd woken up once and asked to use the bathroom, which just about made me cry in relief. Her kidneys were still functioning. I pushed the bland excuse for fried chicken to the side of my plate. Why was all hospital food bland? Because they needed it to be gentle on stomachs? Or maybe I was wrong, and it wasn't, but I was too numb to really taste it. Maybe all hospital food was really good, and we were just too preoccupied to ever notice. Ella, Beckett said gently, pulling me from my thoughts. The MIBG?
Right. It's a relatively new treatment for neuroblastoma that attaches the chemo to the radiation that targets the tumor itself. It's pretty amazing stuff, and they can do it in only 18 hospitals across the country, one of which happens to be in Denver.
That's incredible. The same hospital where Maisie had her surgery?
The same. I poked at my mashed potatoes, dropping my jaw when Beckett shoved in forkful after forkful. How do you eat that?
Spend a decade in the army. You'd be amazed at what sounds great for dinner.
And there was some perspective that had me reaching for my fork.
Any drawbacks to the MIBG?
The trial isn't covered by my insurance. And there it was, the entrance to the nightmare that was my finances.
You're kidding me.
He blinked a couple times, like he expected me to change my answer.
Tell me you're kidding, Ella.
I'm not. I took a bite of my chicken, knowing I needed the calories no matter where they came from.
So, what do we do?
Two lines appeared right above his nose as he leaned forward. The same thing I've been doing. Figure it out. Pay for it. I shrugged, pausing as I took another bite when I realized what he'd said. What do we do? We, not you. We. I managed to swallow before I looked like an idiot with a chicken leg stuck in my face.
What do you mean, the same thing you've been doing? How much haven't they covered?
His tone was calm and even, but a little frightening for the intensity. I shrugged and reached for a roll.
I'm trying really hard not to lose it, so if you'd answer, that would really help me out.
I dragged my eyes from the roll, up his chest, to the vein bulging in his neck. Yep, he was ticked, to his eyes. A lot? They haven't covered a lot.
Why haven't you said anything?
Because it's none of your business? He jerked back like I'd slapped him. Sorry, but it's not. I softened my tone as much as possible. And what would I say? Hey, Beckett, did you know that I gambled my kid's health last year? That my insurance plan doesn't cover half of what Maisie needs? That I've blown through Ryan's life insurance keeping my kid alive?
Yeah, you could start by saying that.
He raked his hand over his hair, clasping his hands at the top of his head.
Start by saying something. How much trouble are you in?
Some.
We waged a silent war, each trying to stare down the other. A few heartbeats later, I gave in.
He was the one trying to help, and I was just being stubborn for the sake of privacy that I didn't really need. The hospital in Denver where she had her surgery is out of network. That means that anything done there, every time she sees Dr. Hughes there or has surgery or a treatment there, it's not covered by my plan.
Is this what's happening now?
Yeah, this is fine, but the MIBG wouldn't be, or the stem cell transplant Dr. Hughes has already suggested.
So, what are the options?
Financially? He nodded.
I don't qualify for government care, not with owning Solitude. I went through my savings the first month of her treatment, and her surgery wiped out the last of Ryan's life insurance. I mortgaged Solitude to the hilt last year for the renovations, so that's not an option either. Even selling the property right now would barely cover paying off the mortgage. So that leaves me with becoming a super stealthy bank robber or stripping online for singlecancermoms.com. That's not funny. I'm not laughing. A moment of silence passed between us as he digested what I'd said. He chewed slowly, like it was my words he was working over. Look, I'm not the only one this happens to. Insurance companies deny treatments all the time. Or they tell you to go with the less expensive options they'll cover. Generic drugs, different hospitals, alternative treatments, that kind of thing. There are payment plans and grants for those who can qualify, and some trials will cover drug costs.
Is there an alternative for the MIBG?
No.
And if she doesn't get it?
My fork hit the plate, and I slowly brought my eyes to his. And if she doesn't respond to these drugs? The muscle in his jaw flexed as his eyes turned hard. This wasn't the guy who tenderly tied cleats or held my daughter, held me. This was the guy who killed people for a living.
You're telling me that Maisie's life isn't just in the hands of her doctors, but her insurance company? They decide if she lives or dies?
In not so many words. They don't decide if she can have the treatment, just if they'll pay for it. The rest, that's on me. I'm the one who has to look at her doctors and say whether I can afford the price tag on my daughter's life. Horror flashed across his face. This guy who had seen and done things that would probably give me nightmares. Pretty screwed up, right? I asked with a mocking smile.
How much is it?
What part? The $20,000 chemo treatments that she gets once a month? The $100,000 surgery? The medication? The travel? He blew out a breath, dropping his hands to his lap.
The MIBG.
Probably 50K, give or take an arm and a leg. But it's Maisie's life. What am I supposed to say? No, please don't save my kid?
Of course not.
Exactly. So I'll figure something out. She'll probably need 2 rounds of the MIBG, and then the stem cell transplant averages about a $500,000.
He paled. A $500,000?
Yep. Cancer is business, and business is good. He pushed away his plate.
I think I've lost my appetite.
And you wonder why I'm losing weight, I joked. He didn't laugh. In fact, he didn't give me more than a one-word answer as we made our way back upstairs. I almost felt guilty for unloading on him. But it felt good in a weird way to share all of that, to acknowledge that so much of this wasn't fair. He sat by me through the night, never once complaining about the chairs or the monitors. He watched every level like a hawk, flipped through the MIBG brochure, paced the hall outside. He FaceTimed Colt and Havoc, brought more coffee, and read through Maisie's binder, which at this point was more personal to me than a diary. He pulled his chair as close to mine as possible, and when I fell asleep around midnight, it was on his shoulder. Beckett was everything I'd desperately needed these last 7 months. What was I going to do when he inevitably left? Now that I knew what it was like to have someone like him in times like this, it would be 1,000 times harder in his absence. I woke with a start to find Beckett standing at Maisie's bedside. He looked at me with a huge grin as the doctor walked in. Stumbling to my feet, I rubbed the sleep out of my eyes and gasped. Maisie was sitting up, her smile wide, her eyes clear. Hi, Mom! Blinking quickly, I looked at the monitors before responding. Her pressure was back up, her temp was down, her oxygen levels up. My hand flew to cover my mouth as my knees buckled, but Beckett caught me by the waist, pulling me to his side without missing a beat.
Hiya, Maisie girl. How are you feeling?
So much better, she answered. My mouth trembled as I looked back at the doctor, who was flipping through the chart, listening to the report of another doctor. It was 7:15 in the morning. The night shift had changed to day while I was asleep.
Well, I asked.
Looks like the drugs are working.
She's going to be just fine.
I turned my face into Beckett's chest before I lost it in front of Maisie. He wrapped his arms around me as I took deep, gulping breaths filled with his scent. I was literally expelling my fear and breathing him in.
Did you hear that, Maisie? Looks like you're not getting out of tutoring next week,
Beckett joked, his voice a gravelly, deep rumble against my ear. He'd driven us here, taken care of me, of Maisie, of Colt, uprooted his entire life to move in next door. He'd been steadfast every time I'd sworn I didn't need him, and there, the moment I did, without any hint of I told you so. I took one last breath and turned back to the doctor, who gave me the satisfied nod of a job well done.
We'll keep her here in the ICU another day, just to make sure, and then move her to pediatrics another few days for monitoring. Better safe than sorry.
Thank you. There weren't any other words to say.
You've got a little fighter there, the doctor said, before heading out, leaving the three of us alone.
I don't have Colt, Maisie said quietly, looking around her bed. It took me a second to realize what she was saying.
I'm sorry, we left so fast that I didn't think to grab him.
The bear was most likely sitting on Colt's bed, the lone pink spot in a sea of blue.
Don't you worry. We'll have your mom grab him when she runs home tomorrow for a little bit. Sound good?
Beckett offered.
What? Me run home? Hell no, I wasn't leaving my daughter.
Yep,
he said with a nod.
If you leave by 10, you can get home, shower the hospital off you, and get to Colt's graduation by 2.
Colt's kindergarten graduation. My mouth dropped, and my gaze flickered from Beckett to Maisie. How could I leave her here? How could I miss Colt's graduation? Sure, it was a little silly, but I knew how important it was to him. How could I leave her here when she was supposed to be walking across the stage with him? How was any of this fair? Beckett cupped my cheeks, stopping the ping-pong battle with my concentration.
Ella, she's stable. She'll be out of the ICU. I am more than capable of hanging out with her for a few hours. You need to be there for Colt. Let me do this. Stop splitting yourself in two and let me help. Please.
Yeah, Mom. You have to go. I don't want Colt to be sad, Maisie added.
I don't have a way to get back.
You take my truck.
Wait,
what? Trucks were sacred to guys. He might as well be offering his soul on a platter.
Your truck.
You do have a driver's license, right?
He joked. Well, yeah.
Then it's settled. You'll grab Pink Colt when you go home tomorrow. In the meantime, Maisie and I will watch movies and hang out. What do you say, Maisie girl?
He looked back at my daughter.
Yes!
You're sure? I asked.
Absolutely.
He took my hands and held them to his chest.
I swear.
The sweetest feeling unfurled in my chest, only to plant deep in my belly. It stretched through my body until I swore my fingertips tingled.
Take lots of pictures, okay?
Okay, I replied, focused on the overwhelming emotion consuming me. It had to be infatuation, right? Who wouldn't crush on this man a little? That's all it was.
Because there was no way in the world I was falling for Beckett. Absolutely none.
He turned and high-fived Maisie, that little strip of white on his wrist screaming louder than my brain could deny. Because while my head had been panicked Saturday night,
focused on forms and doctors and transfers. My heart had declared that this man was trusted. My heart had signed that paper while my head was consumed with other matters. This man was in my life, and in a way, mine, and Colt's, and most definitely Maisie's. After all, that bracelet had her name written on it. Oh, God. I was in love with him.
Chapter 14. Beckett.
Letter number 20. Chaos, I feel like all I write to you about lately is Maisie's diagnosis. Honestly, sometimes I feel like that's all I think about. I've become one of those people with a one-track mind, and everything revolves around her. So let's try to snap out of that for a few minutes. Christmas is coming. It's one of our busiest times of the year for guests, and as usual, we're booked solid through the first week in January, which is great for business and referrals. I moved the kids to the last cabin we had available and took it off the books. It's the best way to keep Maisie safe when her levels bottom out, and so far it's working. And there I go again, back to the cancer. We put up a tree in the cabin, and Haley, my receptionist, moved in with us to help at night when I have to run out. I'm beginning to think the kids like the privacy better, too. Colt even asked for a treehouse out back for Christmas, but I told him he'd have to wait for my brother to get home. I'm pretty handy, but a treehouse maker I am not. It would probably bust apart before he stepped foot in it. I'm also wondering if it's a good idea to build him a treehouse when we'll hopefully be back in the main house soonish. Soon. Whenever. Truth is, everything feels like soon lately. How are you guys holding up with the holidays? Do you need anything? I had Maisie and Colt send you a few pictures. They were worried that you didn't have a Christmas tree, so they drew a few for you and helped me bake this weekend. It's hard to believe it's already December and that you guys are coming home soon. I can't wait to finally see the person I've been talking to all this time and show you around. Don't freak out, but it's definitely what I'm looking forward to most in the new year. Ella.
Problem solving was a skill I was particularly proud of. There wasn't an issue I couldn't fix, a puzzle I couldn't piece together. I was good at making the impossible a reality. But this felt like beating my head against a brick wall just to see how it felt. I flipped through the MIBG information for the 100th time and cross-referenced what I'd found on my phone, what I wouldn't give for my laptop. It was ridiculous that Ella's insurance didn't cover the therapy, but mine would. Then again, if there was one thing the military got right, it was health insurance, which I still had since I'd gotten sidetracked and hadn't signed Donahue's declination papers yet.
I wouldn't have left the tower, Maisie said from her bed, sitting up and bouncing slightly on the mattress.
We'd been out of the ICU since this morning, right before Ella left for Telluride. I glanced over at the movie, Tangled, Rapunzel, got it. You would if your mom was an evil witch.
But she's not, so I would have stayed.
She tugged her cap down farther over her forehead. But look at that big wide world. Are you saying you really don't want to see what's out there? I set everything down on the table. She shrugged, twisting her mouth to the side and scrunching her nose. There's a lot out there. I pushed off the floor, rolling in the chair over to the side of Maisie's bed.
Maybe. Doesn't mean I get to see it.
There was no whine in her voice, just simple, accepted fact. It dawned on me how young she was, how much of her life she remembered, and how much of it had already been spent fighting. This had been a hellish 7 months for Ella, but it must have seemed an eternity for Maisie. You will, I told her. She glanced my way a few times before finally turning her head and meeting my eyes. You will, I repeated. Not just the whole school part either. That's just the beginning.
I can't even graduate kindergarten, she whispered. Please don't tell Mom I'm sad. She's already sad enough.
It was like talking to a mini Ella, already concerned about everyone else but herself. Even their eyes were the same, except Maisie hadn't learned how to guard her thoughts yet. I have an idea, I said. 40 minutes, another hospital gown, and a quick run to the nurse's station, and we were nearly ready.
Ready? She called from the bathroom. Almost, I tried to say, my mouth holding the tape dispenser as I wrapped the string around the frayed edge of a strip of my undershirt. I ran the string up to the top of the hat and then taped it. Arts and crafts were not my strong suit, but this would do. I knocked on the bathroom door, and it opened far enough for Maisie to stick a hand out. Your Highness, I said, handing her my creation. Thank you, God, for nurses and pediatric craft stations. Maisie giggled and took it, shutting the door in my face. Man, she'd bounced back so quickly. The antibiotics were still pumping through her IV line, and she was still hospital-bound, but it was night and day from the day of the soccer game. I kicked myself for the 100th time for not noticing while I'd carried her to and from the car. There had been no fever then, no redness, nothing. But I'd known she was off, that she was overtired.
Are you ready?
She asked. I checked my watch. They would be walking across their little stage any minute now. I am if you are.
Give a speech,
she ordered with the door between us. You know, normally you wouldn't be in hiding, right?
You're not supposed to see me until you call my name.
That's for a wedding, I told her, trying not to laugh. The bride and groom aren't supposed to see each other until they meet at the altar, not this. The door opened and I caught it so she could walk through, bringing her IV pole with her. She stepped around the door and my smile flew so wide I thought it might split my face. She wore a solid-colored hospital gown over her normal one, courtesy of the nursing staff, and on her head was my god-awful graduation cap. Those suckers were awkward to make. Her tassel, streaming from the side, was thick on the fringe. But I'd been under a little pressure, not my finest work, but it would do. Please be seated, I ordered, moving to stand at the far side of the room at the foot of her bed. Head held high, she walked over and took a seat at the table. Motion from the door drew my eye, but when I saw it was just the two nurses who had helped me hunt for supplies, I threw them a quick smile and turned back to my one girl audience.
Speech,
she reminded me with a serious nod. Right. I quickly grabbed the rolled-up paper that served as her makeshift diploma that I'd scribbled on. Today is the start of your journey. What the hell was I supposed to say next? People weren't my strong suit, let alone kids. She tilted her head, nearly losing the hat, and quickly righted it.
Go on.
Okay. An idea popped into my head, and I ran with it. I've heard it said that the greatest adventure is what lies ahead. Well, I read it, but we're going to use it. Maisie stifled a giggle and then nodded in all seriousness.
Go on.
And the story I read was about a fierce princess who wanted to fight for her kingdom. When all the men were called to war, she was told that as the princess, she had to stay behind and care for her people. She argued with the king that she could care for her people by fighting for them, but he ordered her to stay behind, to stay safe.
He wanted her to stay in her tower, she said, leaning forward.
Hey, at graduations, the graduates don't interact with the speakers, I teased her. She grinned but sat back in her chair and made the motion like she was zipping her lips. Now, where was I? Ah, the princess, right. So the princess, being as smart as she was, knew she was needed. So she dressed like a man and snuck into the army camp, riding out to battle with the men. Maisie's eyes lit up and her mouth dropped open slightly.
What happened?
What do you think? She ran into battle in full armor, swinging her giant sword, and she struck down the dragon. Slaying it in one mighty swipe and defending her kingdom. She was the leader her people needed, because she was brave enough to fight. Maisie nodded enthusiastically, and I almost forgot I was supposed to be giving a graduation speech for a 6-year-old. Right, so, as you embark on this journey of your education, you must remember to be brave like the princess.
And tell all the kings they're wrong.
She jumped up. Oh, this was not going the way I intended. Kind of, when you're, you know, big enough to swing a sword. She seemed to ponder this for a second, and then nodded with all seriousness. So, I continued, you have to fight for what you know to be right. Stand up for the people who need your protection. Never let anyone tell you that you're anything less than a warrior because you're a girl. Because in my experience, girls are the strongest warriors. Maybe that's why all the boys try to keep them out of the battle. They're scared they'll get shown up.
Makes sense,
Maisie agreed. Is that it?
It is. Speech over. I tried to recall any graduation I'd ever had and failed, because I'd never had one. I'd shipped out for basic the moment I finished my senior year, the day before graduation. But I'd seen plenty in movies. I cleared my throat. The time has come for you to leave the childish, carefree days of kindergarten and embark on your journey in elementary school. When I call your name, please rise and accept your diploma.
Beckett, you know I'm the only one here, right?
I shushed her. I haven't said your name yet, graduate. She gave me the same look Ella did when she was ready to call me on my crap, and I pressed my lips together to keep from laughing. Margaret Ruth McKenzie. She stood, regal as that princess, and walked toward me with her head held high, bringing her IV pole with her. When she arrived in front of me, I crouched down to her eye level. Congratulations on your graduation. I handed her the diploma with one hand and shook her hand with the other.
Now what?
She whispered. Now you flip your tassel to the other side. She did the mouth and nose scrunch thing again and moved her tassel to the opposite side. I now pronounce you graduated, I said in the most official tone I could muster. She grinned and laughed, pure joy radiating from her like sunshine. Then she launched herself into my arms as the nurses in the doorway began to clap. I held her, careful not to squeeze too tight, but she didn't have the same issue and hugged me to the point of near strangulation. Man, I loved this kid, loved her strength, her tenacity, her kindness. She was one of a kind, and I hope she knew how precious she was, not just to her mom, but to the world. As the clapping subsided, I glanced over to see no less than half a dozen nurses watching Maisie's graduation. The girl was magnetic. She drew people to her everywhere she went, and I was no different.
How about a picture?
A nurse who looked to be about Ella's age asked. Yes, absolutely. I handed my cell phone to her, and she snapped a few of Maisie and me. Thank you. Now, just the graduate, I said to Maisie, turning the camera on her as she struck a pose.
It was Eowyn, the nurse said with a smile, while the other nurses congratulated the graduate. The princess who slayed the Nazgul? It was Eowyn.
Busted. Tolkien fan?
Movie fan. Kind of comes with the territory when you work in pediatrics.
Think she noticed? She shrugged.
It was a good speech. Little girls need more warrior queens. I like warrior queens, Maisie said, coming to stand next to me. Is it time for Moana?
As quickly as her joy came on, she sagged a little against me, and I felt the tiredness take over. That sounds like a plan to me. Putting my forearm under her, I stood, lifting her slight weight and carried her back to bed, her IV in my other hand. She scooted back, sitting upright, and took off her cap as the nurses left.
Thank you,
she said, playing with the tassel. I know it's not the same.
It's better.
She met me with a look that left no room for argument. I sat on the edge of her bed, adjusting her IV pole so it was closer to her. It's just the start, Maisie. You have so much ahead of you. The summers, the mountains, the sunrises, the choices you'll get to make when you decide which college you want to go to, the second you take off on a trip to backpack across Europe. Those are the moments when you find out who you'll be, and that's just a glimpse of what's waiting for you when you're past this.
But what if this is all there is?
She whispered. It's not, I promised. Her face twisted, her lips pursing, and tears welled in her eyes.
Am I dying? Is that what's happening to me? Mom won't tell me. Please tell me, Beckett.
A vice gripped my heart, squeezing until I was sure it couldn't beat. Maisie,
please, am I going to die?
I thought of the MIBG therapy she needed, the countless drugs, treatments, operations, transplants, everything that was standing between her and a disease-free body. Not on my watch. I didn't care what I had to do. I'd find a way for her to get what she needed. I wasn't watching another kid die if I had the power to change her fate.
Okay.
She relaxed against the raised bed and took my word like it was gospel. Then she grinned as she played with the strands of her tassel.
I'm glad you're here.
Before I lost my shit in front of her, I leaned forward, pressing my lips to her forehead in a quick kiss. When I pulled away, I forced a smile and blinked back the awkward wetness in my eyes. Me too, Maisie. Me too. Gentry, I'm glad you're here. Mark Gutierrez met me as I parked the truck at the trailhead. He was in his early 30s, fit with a full head of black hair and enough confidence to make him a good unit leader for our search and rescue operation, but he wasn't arrogant. I was good with confidence, but arrogance was a deal breaker. Arrogance got men killed. Kids, too. Havoc jumped to the ground behind me, already wearing her work vest. That had always signaled her that playtime was over, and I was relieved that our time in Telluride hadn't changed that. Between the trips to Denver and the days I'd spent in Montrose with Maisie, I'd worried that she'd fall out of rhythm. I'd gone back to Montrose and brought Ella and Maisie home yesterday, after being there for a week. When the call came in this afternoon, Havoc had jumped right back into action. "Hey, Havoc," Gutierrez said, moving toward her. "Nope, she's in work mode." I cut off his access. She was on alert and sensitive at the moment, and I really didn't need to file an accident report that he'd lost a finger. "Right. Sorry, we've never had a retired MWD. No problem. Bring me up to speed." Havoc stayed close to my side as we moved closer to the group of men. Half were in the Telluride uniform, and others in the San Miguel County. "Why are we here if the county boys are too? They've been looking for hours, and the missing hiker is a VIP up at one of the resorts, so we got called in to add some manpower." "Gotcha." The circle parted as Gutierrez and I joined in. Havoc was given a wide berth as she sat at my command. The guy in the center, who was obviously in charge by the bullhorn hooked at his belt, shot us a glare as a greeting. "As I was saying for you latecomers, Mrs. DePrevney went out with her hiking guide this morning with her two daughters, ages 7 and 12. "Not a kid. Please don't be a kid. I refused to be responsible for the death of another child. When she fell, we believe breaking her leg, she sent the guide back with her daughters to call for help. Apparently they were surprised at the lack of service up on the High Line, so we can all assume the guide isn't a local." A snort of exasperation went through the group. I sighed in relief that it was an adult out there alone. "Guide returned at noon and called the county. We deployed search and rescue shortly thereafter with no luck. Rain was definitely not our friend." I looked up at the sky. The clouds were still gray, but no longer the water-heavy version known for the quick-tempered thunderstorms around here. We should be in the clear to work for a while. "As you can tell, the rain has ceased. We need to find her, quickly. We've got about 4 hours left of good sunlight. According to the guide, he left her about an hour in and marked the trail with her bandana, which is pink. We found the bandana, and it's still there, but there's no Mrs. DePrevney. Plan is to hike in as a group, then zone out, search coordinates, and get this woman back to her husband." A hand went up from one of the Telluride guys. Capshaw, if I remembered correctly. I really needed to spend more time with the other guys when I went in, not just training Havoc. "Capshaw." At least I got that one right. "Who's taking point on this?" A mumble went through the group, and I saw it for what it was. Two rival organizations working together, and hoped it wouldn't get in the way. Egos usually blew an op. I scanned the group, seeing another dog and handler on the opposite side in a county uniform. A yellow lab who was changing his position from sitting to standing every minute or so. Restless. Not my business. "County is taking point. Telluride is here as support." Another mumble. "If you guys are done determining pecking order, can we get started?" I asked, impatience getting to me. The guy's eyes narrowed in my direction, and then Havoc's. "You're the new guy, right? The soldier? And the dog?" Heads swung in my direction. "That's us. Now if we're done wasting daylight?" He made the "be my guest" gesture toward the trailhead, and we took off. I tightened my small pack on my back and zipped the lightweight fleece across my chest. It was already cool and only going to get colder. "Damn, gotta step on toes on day one?" Gutierrez asked, walking next to me. "No point talking when the mission is pretty clear." "Point taken." We handed out radio frequencies as a group and hiked along the trail, crossing a bridge and earning a view of Telluride. It really was spectacular here, with the mountains rising on both sides of us, reaching toward the sky. Ahead, about 20 yards, the other dog sprinted through the meadow that ran alongside of us. Havoc stayed right by my side, her footsteps and breathing steady. "So I saw you downtown with Ella McKenzie," Gutierrez said, breaking the silence I'd been enjoying. "Probably." I liked Mark well enough while we were on duty and occasionally made an effort with him on the conversation front, but Ella wasn't on my list of approved topics. Something going on there? He asked in a locker room talk kind of way. Be careful, I warned. Hey, I know Ella. She's a good girl. Woman. I used to be friends with her brother. He died. You know that, right? About 6 months ago. My heart stuttered in a beat that had nothing to do with the altitude. Yeah, I know. She's got kids, too. Good kids. Yep. What was this guy getting at? He sighed, curving the bill on his cap in a nervous tell. This guy would be easy pickings at a poker table. Look, I'm not trying to be nosy. Sure you are. Question is, why? He looked behind us, seeing what I already knew. There were about 20 feet between us and the nearest crew members, enough distance to talk in private. I'm just trying to look out for her. Good to know. There wasn't a soul on the planet who cared more about Ella than I did, and while it was almost cute, his concern, it was absolutely unnecessary. I'm serious. She's got a shit ton going on, and if there was a short end of the stick to be had, Ella was given it. Between losing her parents and Jeff walking out. You know Jeff? My footsteps would have faltered if my body hadn't been on autopilot, used to pushing on when my mind went elsewhere. Knew Jeff, he corrected. I hung out with his older brother Blake. One preppy name after another, I muttered. Gutierrez laughed. That's so true. They both are. Preppy assholes, that is. Trust fund babies who never had to struggle a day in their lives. Both had their fortunes handed to them, and now their jobs. A stab of pure hatred coursed through me like an acidic poison burning in my veins. Of course he had everything easy, while Ella worked her ass off. So you know where he is? Sure. He's working for his daddy's company in Denver, engaged to the daughter of a politician if his Facebook is true. I stored the information away, feeding the plan that had been forming since I'd promised Maisie that she wasn't going to die. Anyway, you and Ella serious? He looked at me sideways, and I glanced at his hand. Nice, wide gold band. Good. I wasn't in the mood to fight off some guy for Ella. Not when I couldn't trust myself not to beat the shit out of him. We're friends, I said in that non-committal way. I'm just helping her out. He seemed to ponder that for a minute, and then nodded. Good. That's good. She needs all the help she can get right now with her kids. No. I corrected, my eyes scanning the forest line just in case we found our hiker. She doesn't need help. She's honestly got it handled all on her own, but I need to help her. I don't want her to have to handle it solo. There's a difference. Gutierrez nodded again like a bobblehead, but sincere. Maybe I'd spent too much time around soldiers. Maybe civilians chatted about their feelings on hikes in the mountains. Maybe I was the odd one for being so closed off, not him for being so inquisitive. Sorry, man. It's a small town, and you're new. And after losing Ryan, I know she's hurting. I mean, they wouldn't even tell her what happened. Of course they didn't, because when ops went wrong, when soldiers were knocked unconscious instead of killed, then hauled out by insurgents into the desert, stripped of their uniforms, bound, gagged, tortured, and shot in the back of their heads while wearing nothing but their boxers, the military tended to hide it from their families and call it classified. No one wanted to think of that happening to their brother. I mean, they wouldn't even let her see his body. That's gotta mess with her. For all she knows, he could still be alive somewhere, and the military is covering it up to turn him into Jason Bourne or something. It's messed up. The muscles in my jaw flexed as I clenched my teeth to keep my mouth shut. This guy didn't know anything, not what happened to Ryan, not that he was my best friend. He was just trying to watch out for Ella. To make sure I had a good, clear picture of what she'd been through. At least that's what I kept telling myself as we approached the search location. The path was lined with aspens, which cut our field of vision to a minimum, but there it was, tied to the stump, a pink bandana. We gathered in another circle as Bullhorn Guy took center stage. It was time to go to work. That's quite a dog you have there. Gutierrez told me about an hour later, when our hiker had been airlifted out and we were headed back down the trail. She's one of a kind, I agreed. He then let me walk the rest of the way in silence, for which I was grateful. It had taken me months to let Ryan in, and years to become his best friend. Ella was the only person I'd ever had an instant connection with, and I smiled when I realized Maisie and Colt were on that list now, too. We made it down to the trail base, and I opened the truck door for Havoc to jump in. She settled in the passenger seat, happy and a little tired. You did great today.
Gutierrez said as he stripped off his own pack, loading it into the car parked next to mine.
Thanks. It felt good to be useful.
Yeah, I get that.
He took off his hat and rubbed his head.
Look, about the stuff I said about Ella?
Don't, it's okay. My grip tightened on my doorframe.
Small town, he said with a weak shrug.
It really was. Maybe not the village with the ski resorts, but the old town, especially when the tourists weren't around and it was mostly locals. They were all connected here, and I might not understand it, but I could do my best to respect it.
Ryan hasn't been dead 6 months.
Gutierrez's head snapped up.
He's been dead for 5 months and 7 days, give or take a few hours. A few very long hours. I know because he was my best friend. I served with him for the better part of a decade.
Oh, man. I'm so sorry.
His whole posture slumped.
Don't be. Never be sorry for looking out for Ella. I told you only so you'd know that there's nothing I wouldn't do to keep her safe, to take care of her and the kids. Nothing. They're the whole reason I'm here.
He swallowed and finally looked at me, taking a deep breath.
Okay. Thank you for telling me. If you need anything, or if she does, just let me know. Or ask my wife, Tess. Ella won't ever ask.
Yeah, she's pretty stubborn like that.
A ghost of a smile crossed his face.
Something tells me you are too.
Guilty. I drove home with a tired body, a content dog, and a mind that wouldn't quit running circles. I'd meant what I said. There wasn't anything I wouldn't do to keep Ella and the kids safe. Or was there? I hit the brakes as I passed Ella's cabin. Her insurance wouldn't pay for the treatments that could save Maisie's life. But I'd read over every scrap of information online about that hospital, and my insurance would. I threw the truck into reverse and then turned down Ella's drive. I was out of the truck before the engine died, taking her steps two at a time and pounding on her door before my brain kicked in with every reason she'd say no, knowing I'd have to convince her to say yes.
Beckett?
Ella asked as she opened the front door. She was in jeans and a long-sleeve tee, her hair in a thick side braid that made me want to grab hold of it while I kissed her.
Everything okay?
Yeah, sorry for the drop-by. Do you have a second?
Sure, come on in.
Not where the kids can hear, I said softly, tucking my thumbs into my pockets. Her eyebrows raised in surprise, but she stepped out onto the porch, shutting the door behind her.
Okay, what's up?
Your insurance won't pay for the MIBG therapy, or the hospital she needs, or the stem cell transplant.
That's right.
She folded her arms under her breasts and looked up at me, those blue eyes inquisitive but trusting. She has to have it, right? Or she'll die.
Beckett, what is this about?
Will she die without it? I repeated my words a little sharper than I'd ever used with Ella.
Yes,
she whispered. I nodded to myself, turning around and pacing the length of the porch while Ella followed.
Beckett,
she snapped. I turned around and took a deep breath to steady my nerves. Your insurance won't pay for it.
Right, we already covered that.
But mine will.
Okay.
She blinked at me, her forehead puckering.
Ella,
marry me.
Chapter 15. Ella.
Letter number 15. Ella, we lost someone today. You'd think I'd be used to it after all this time, even callous toward it. A few years ago I was. I have no idea what's changed lately, but now it feels like every loss is exponentially harder than the last. Or maybe they're the same, but I'm different, more angry. It's hard to describe, but I'm somehow more aware now of my disconnection, my inability to forge emotional bonds outside of a few close friends. That small list includes you. How can I be so connected to someone I've never laid eyes on, yet not the majority of the guys around me? Is it that you're safer through paper because you're not standing in front of me? Less of a threat, maybe? I wish I knew. I wish I had the words for this guy's wife, his kids. I wish I could take it away from them, take his place. Why does the world take the people who are loved, ripping holes in the fabric of other people's souls, while I'm allowed to skate by unscathed? Where's the justice in such a random system? And if there's no justice, then why are we here? I feel that same restless urge taking over again, to accomplish the mission and move on, Check the box, pull up the stakes, and know we made a difference. I'm just not sure what that difference is anymore. Tell me something real. Tell me what it feels like to live in the same place your whole life. Is it stifling to have such deep roots? Or does it let you sway instead of break when the wind comes? I've gone with the wind for so long that I honestly can't imagine it. Thank you for letting me unload on you. I promise I won't be such a downer next time. Chaos.
I'm sorry? I asked, staring at Beckett like he had two heads. What did you just say? There was no way he'd said what I heard. Marry me. Or maybe he did say it. Have you lost your mind?
Maybe.
He leaned back against the porch railing, but didn't cross his arms in front of his chest like he did when his stubborn switch was triggered. Instead, he grasped either side of the railing, leaving his torso unprotected, vulnerable.
But it would work. On paper, at least.
I can't. I'm speechless.
Good. That will give me a chance to convince you.
Oh my God, he was serious.
If you marry me, the kids are my dependents. I can take care of them.
You want to marry me to take care of my kids? I said it slowly, certain I had somehow heard it wrong.
Yes.
My mouth opened and closed a few times as I tried to get a word, any word, past my lips. I just couldn't think of any.
What do you think?
We're not even dating, and you want to get married? Havoc came trotting up to the porch, but she didn't go to Beckett. She sat next to me, like she'd sensed her handler had lost his fool mind.
Not in the romantic sense.
He raked a hand over his face. I suck at explaining this.
Try harder. Okay. I was reading the MIBG papers in the hospital with Maisie, and I remembered what you'd said about your insurance not covering it. So I looked through the hospital website, and they take my insurance, and not at your co-insurance rate. The whole thing is covered.
Good for you. Now you can get treated for cancer. How the hell could he just suggest that we get married?
I'm not done explaining.
I wanted to throw him back in his truck and off my property. But there was the tiniest spark in me that lit up at the thought that Maisie could get the treatment she needed. And that little spark was hope. Man, I hated hope. Hope fooled you, gave you the warm, fuzzy feelings just to yank them away again. And right now, Beckett was a big slice of warm, fuzzy hope. And I hated him for it. Taking my silence for acquiescence, Beckett continued.
If you marry me, the kids are covered. All of Maisie's treatments are paid for. No more fighting with the insurance people, no more generics. She will get the best possible treatments.
You want me to marry you, to become your wife, sleep in your bed when you won't so much as kiss me, all for insurance? Like I'm some kind of
Whoa!
He interrupted me, waving his hands.
We wouldn't have to actually, you know.
His eyebrows rose at least an inch. No, I don't know. I crossed my arms over my chest, knowing damn well what he meant. If he had the balls to suggest marriage, he could certainly lay out the terms. He sighed in exasperation.
We'd only have to be married in the legal sense, on paper. We could live separately and everything. Keep your name, whatever. It would just be to cover the kids.
Oh my God. The man I loved was really standing in front of me proposing marriage. Not because he loved me back, but because he thought it would save my daughter. Now I loved him even more, and hated both of us for it.
Only in the legal sense? So you don't actually want me? You only want to protect my kids?
Great, now I sounded pissed that he didn't want me in his bed. If my emotions could just pick a side, that would be great.
I thought we covered this already. I want you. That just doesn't play into me asking you to marry me.
Can you actually hear yourself? You want me, but you don't want to marry me. But you're willing to marry me to cover the kids for insurance, as long as we don't actually live like we're married. All of the legal entanglement, none of the love or the commitment or the sex. Which left us with the only aspect of marriage I was really familiar with. The part where the husband walked away.
Exactly.
Okay, this conversation is over. I turned and then spun right back around to face him. You know what? It's not. Marriage means something to me, Beckett. Or at least it used to. Maybe it's not the same for you, or you think because of the way I let Jeff divorce me that I think it's just a piece of paper, but it's not. It's supposed to be a lifetime of love and commitment and loyalty. It's supposed to be all those vows about sickness and health and better and worse and loving someone even on the days you don't like them. It's not, hey, let's sign this piece of paper and join up while it's convenient. It's supposed to be about building a life with the one person on earth who is meant to be yours. It's not meant to be temporary. It's supposed to be forever. He stepped toward me and then stopped himself, tucking his thumbs in his pockets. It's about love, Beckett.
And I love your kids. No, it's supposed to be about it.
The intensity in his voice, his eyes, hit me smack in the heart. They love you too, I admitted. So do I. Which was why I couldn't agree to this. It would destroy them when it ended. Signing myself up for the hurt was one thing, but my kids? That was where I drew the line. His whole posture softened, like my words had taken some of the fight out of him.
I don't want to do anything that would jeopardize them or you. I'm just saying that if they were mine, legally, or half mine, Maisie could get the treatment she needs. This could save her life.
That spark of hope flared, shining too much light on everything the kids and I had been through. All the sleepless nights. All the medical bills that piled up on my desk, threatening to bankrupt us. The overwhelming knowledge that if she didn't have the MIBG treatment, she most likely wouldn't live.
But what happened to her once Beckett was done playing house?
I don't know you nearly well enough for this. Not in the ways that matter.
His eyes flared with pain, and those defenses went back up. You know me well enough to have given me decision-making rights for Maisie, right?
That was for a few hours, so I could go to Colt's graduation, and only for the worst-case scenario.
Reality check, Ella. Your entire life right now is a worst-case scenario.
Ouch. Yeah, well, you said it yourself. You've never been in a relationship that lasted more than a month. You weren't even willing to kiss me because you said you'd screw it up and that would hurt Colt and Maisie.
The anger vanished from his face instantly and was replaced with an overwhelming sadness. You don't trust me.
My heart wanted to. My heart screamed that he would do anything for the kids.
My head, on the other hand, wasn't backing down from his own declaration that it wouldn't last.
I thought I knew Jeff. I loved him. I gave him everything. And the minute that everything turned into the twins, he walked. I never dated again, not once. I swore that I'd never put my kids in a position to let someone walk out on them again.
I would never walk away from them, or you. I will always show up, Ella.
Don't you dare lie to me. The men in my life have a habit of promising with one hand and packing with the other.
It wasn't a lie the first time I said it, and nothing's changed. It's a vow.
That was for soccer, not marriage. You can't stand there and promise me always when 2 weeks ago you weren't even open to the possibility of a relationship.
It's just on paper, Ella.
It's not. The way you're proposing that I depend on you, that my kids depend on you, is not on paper. That's very real. What if you walk away while she's mid-treatment?
They'd stop it. How is that any better than me struggling right now to find the money? If anything, it would be more damaging, because at least I know what I'm up against right now. Do you know what a long haul this is? Even if she beats it, the relapse rate? You don't understand the long-term implications of what you're offering, as well-intentioned as it may be. And it was. It was the most heartfelt, genuine offer I'd ever received. But life had taught me long ago that intentions were worth nothing. All I can give you is my word, and the promise that no matter what happens to me, they'd be covered. Maisie would live. You don't know that, either. My biggest fear slipped out as if it were nothing. But I should be used to it by now with this man. He had a way of stripping away my defenses, leaving me open to the elements. But I didn't know how to trust the appearance of sunshine after living in a perpetual hurricane. Not when there was the overwhelming possibility that he was simply the eye of the storm.
I don't,
he admitted.
But when she asked if she was going to die, I promised her that it wasn't going to happen on my watch. And this is the only way I can think of to keep that promise.
Ice ran through my veins, chilling me from the heart outward. My daughter asked you if she's going to die?
Yeah, when we were in Montrose.
And you're just now telling me this? I stalked forward until I was only a breath away from him, glaring up at his stupid, perfect face.
Yeah, I guess.
And you promised her that she wasn't going to die.
What else would you have wanted me to say, Ella? That she has a 10% chance of living until November? That's only 5 months from now.
He had the nerve to look like I was the one who was nuts. I'm well aware. My voice pitched breakingly high. You don't think I keep a mental countdown in my head? That I'm not excruciatingly aware of every day with her? How dare you tell her that she won't die? You have no right to make that kind of promise to her.
To her? Or to you?
He asked softly.
She's a child who needs to be reassured, told how strong she is, that this fight is far from over, and yes, I realize how long this will take. I'm not about to tell her she's a few months away from defeat.
You shouldn't have made that promise, I reiterated. I don't lie to my kids, and you can't either.
This war she's fighting is overwhelming. It's David versus Goliath. Right. And you've armed her with a slingshot and sent her against the giant. I'm telling you that I have a damn tank, and you won't use it. Are you really going to watch her die because you won't gamble that I'm a decent guy? What do you want? Character references? A lie detector? Put me through anything you want. Just let me save her.
He swore, and that alone pulled me out of my anger enough to listen to the rest of what he was saying. You swore. I don't think I've ever heard you swear before. He walked past me, running his hands over his hair until they clasped behind his neck. Once half the porch was between us, he turned around.
You have my most sincere apology for that. I haven't said a word like that aloud for over 10 years. But the rest? I won't apologize for that. You can think I'm crazy all you want. I get it. You're scared of her dying and scared of what kind of guy she's changed to as a dad if she lives. Even if it's only on paper.
Yes and no.
Which one?
I'm not scared of her being chained to you, I admitted softly. I know you'd do anything for them. I see it in the way you take care of them, the way they trust you.
But you won't trust me to stay.
How long could Ryan's letter possibly keep him here? Was he so honor-driven by that letter that he would sacrifice himself with a marriage? Could I trust that honor to keep him around long enough to save Maisie? This was all such a screwed-up tangle of a mess. I don't trust anyone to stay, and you've already warned me that I shouldn't, that you'll eventually walk out. Oh, no. You don't get to use my words against me unless you get them right. I said you wouldn't let me stay, that you'd push me out. But it looks like you don't even need me to mess things up before you start shoving. Do you do that to everyone who gets close to you? Or am I just lucky?
I ignored the truth of his jab, refusing to look in the metaphorical mirror he'd held up to my face.
You know what? None of this matters. Not when it's a giant lie.
We'd be committing fraud, Beckett. A fake piece of paper about a non-existent relationship. And if we were caught... I'm not putting the kids through that.
His jaw set in a tense line, and he gave me a singular nod before turning and walking down the steps.
Havoc immediately abandoned me to follow him, tiny traitor that she was.
He turned at the bottom of the steps. Are you really saying that you're not willing to bend your morals in order to save your daughter's life? To give me some of that precious trust that you keep locked up tighter than Fort Knox?
I felt the verbal blow all the way to my toes. Was that really what I was doing? Choosing my own morals, my own trust issues over Maisie's life? Was I so jaded that I couldn't believe? Couldn't hope when my own brother had vouched for him.
Ryan, you want me to trust you? My voice softened. I do.
Okay. Tell me how Ryan died.
The color drained from his face. That's not fair. A piece of that warm, fuzzy hope burned up in my chest. Don't make me lie to you.
He begged, or threatened, I couldn't tell. I stood silently, waiting for him to say something different, to give me some of the trust he was asking.